The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media. Give us feedback on this podcast or ask tech questions by calling the voicemail hotline at 877-414-5856. That's 877-414-5856 to get your questions answered.
Well, when you think anime, you can only think of one thing. You got to think of the right stuff. Or rightstuff.com. RIGHTSTUF. Just one F. Forget the second F. The second F doesn't exist. Just like the spoon, the second F doesn't exist. And I guess the brains behind the operation is Sean Kleckner, a man from my, I don't know if you'd call it an alma mater. Is our high school an alma mater for us?
Well, I don't know. I would think so.
I'd imagine. We both went to Southeast Polk High School. He graduated before me with much higher grades. I think you. What's the letter that comes before A? Because I think that's what you were getting the whole time.
Oh, I don't know about that.
And I was just moving along here. You know, I was just happy to get a minus next to the B. I thought that was a good thing. I was like, well, you know, it's not a B. It's good. They had to put a symbol next to it. That's a good thing.
Well, at least it wasn't a forked F.
Yeah, you know, I completely agree with you. Completely agree with you. So you have been doing this resource. You've had this online for years, rightstuff.com, selling nothing but anime.
Well, we really started out a long time ago, back in the galaxy far, far away, selling old 1960s cartoons. And the show that we started out with was a program called Astro Boy, which was really popular in the the early 1960s. And it turns out that anime really is, you know, an amazing, genre. It started out all the way back in the 60s, and Astro Boy being the really first Japanese program to be exported to the U.S. to be sold. So we started out with these old 1960s black and white cartoons, and over the course of the last 18 or 19 years, have kind of morphed into this company that does all kinds of different Japanese-related animation and related merchandise, starting out from this old cartoon.
Is anime really that big?
Well, anime is a really diverse programming genre. It's not just the Pokemons of the world or the Sailor Moons of the world. It's very diverse. There's programming that is made for kids, obviously. You see that on TV all the time, the Dragon Ball Z, the Yu-Gi-Oh, the heavily merchandised stuff like Pokemon. But it's really diverse, and it starts out with the kids' programming, but there's a lot of programming for teens, for young teens, for older teens, and all the way up to erotica for adults, really. There's so many programs of it, that are made every year in Japan, and animation is one of the prime exports that they have.
Now, you brought up Astro Boy, and if I'm correct, you own the rights to that particular, comic, that anything related to Astro Boy?
Well, no, really, the only thing that we own is the 1960s cartoon program.
Okay.
Now, Astro Boy has been reintroduced over the course of the last few years. I mean, it was on WB and a new program in 2003, and then we weren't really involved in that. Our involvement really is just with the 1960s program.
Has there been much call for that?
Well, I mean, it was very, very popular. If you go back to the 60s, I mean, there's rating sheets from NBC showing it beating the local news and and Superman and, all these old 1960s shows at the time. And, over the course of the last many, many years, we've slowly restored this program. It's 104 episodes, and we're actually releasing the series on DVD starting in March. We actually do have every single episode, all 104, coming out in two separate box sets.
Fans are going to be screaming for that.
Well, I mean, I think so, but it's kind of a strange thing because, half of my market, I'm marketing to teens to sell the regular anime programming, and this really is not an anime show in most people's eyes. It's a nostalgia program that people in their early 40s watched when they were kids, and they want to share it with their kids. So, I mean, it's kind of an interesting market to market to such a diverse audience.
I've noticed and I don't know if it's a trend or if it's just the way things are happening now. If I'm flipping through afternoon programming, I'll notice that a lot of cartoons seem to be Japanimation.
It's kind of amazing. It's not only the anime programs that are coming over and are being shown on the TV. I mean, Cartoon Network is showing a lot of different programming, and you have programming on the Fox Kids and some of the other blocks. But a lot of the style has really been adapted by some of the American animation studios, where they really have taken on some of the the things that, that anime is known for, the really detailed backgrounds, the giant eyes, the style. And it's really kind of fascinating to see. And you see that also in the manga market. That's really just exploded over the course of the last 2 or 3 years, these giant, thick comic books that are popular every day in Japan are making their way over in the market here. And you'll see also American cartoonists who are adapting their style and releasing their product in a similar manner.
Now, we're playing with a couple words now. Anime, manga. Could you define these for me? I mean, you got to understand, I'm a complete noob here.
Oh, don't worry about it. Manga is really the term that's used to describe Japanese comics. And Japanese comics aren't little 32-page books like you would normally see if you go to a comic book shop here in the States. A Japanese comic book is, or a manga book, is generally, somewhere between 180 and 250 pages.
Jeez.
And it's an enormous market in Japan, and it's very broad-based. It's not something that you just see kids using. I mean, when you think of comic books, you think, the comic book guy in The Simpsons or something. It's some, older guy who reads comics, or it's younger kids that go to the comic book store and buy it. That's not the case in Japan. I mean, the last time I went to Tokyo, I sat next to a guy who must have been in his 50s or 60s, and next to me, he's sitting there reading a giant, thick comic book. I mean, it's a very pervasive part of society. Now, anime is a separate, thing. It's actually a French term that the Japanese took on. Which basically just describes an animation program. Mm. But, it's really here used for an animation program that's done in the Japanese style.
Okay. That makes a little more sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have gone into local stores here. I live in Seattle, and we've got a international district, a Chinatown, whatever you want to call it, and there's a store where it's attached to a grocery store, and it's basically a bookstore. And they,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't read anything on the shelves. I mean, it's all Japanese. But a lot of comics, a lot of art, it seems.
Well, it's fascinating though. I mean, Chris, you go to a regular bookstore now, and there's a Walden Books down the street from my house, and I went there the other day, and it has a whole manga section.
Wow.
I mean, it's several shelves of nothing but manga books.
Now,
I mean, three, five, even 10 years ago, that would just have been unthinkable.
Is that in English, or has it been translated at all?
Those are all in English, yes. There's an enormous market for English-translated manga books right now.
See, that would be interesting to me, I mean, to see something in English. Would you consider it like a graphic novel of sorts?
Well, it's basically what it is.
Okay.
It's a graphic novel, but it's adapting an original Japanese graphic novel. And translating all the words and the sound effects and all the stuff into English and retypesetting it and putting it back out as a book.
So you really kind of began this, walking into this world before the internet took off.
Yeah, we didn't have an internet presence when we started. I mean, we started back in the real late 80s. So, most of what we were doing, as a boutique video publisher, we couldn't even get into the stores. I mean, this is back before there was, Best Buy on the corner and video stores at the mall. I mean, video was rental. That was it. So what we actually did is we started by, basically selling to those video stores, but also operating as a small mail order outfit for our own stuff. We would be able to we'd have a little catalog we would send out to the various fans and such, and people would buy my mail order. And then when the internet came into being, I mean, we did have, I really think, one of the first anime stores on the internet. I can't, obviously tell you the date specifically because I don't know right off the top of my head, but I mean, we were selling on the internet when it was there, when it became, well before it became the internet it is today.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, we just kind of morphed that mail order outfit into what is rightstuff.com today. It basically a seller of not only our published merchandise, the stuff that we make, the products that we license, but also pretty much everybody else's industry products.
Has that been a boon? Has that been good for you?
Well, yeah, because it really kind of gives us a key on what's going on in the market. I mean, I know what people like because I see what they're buying.
Now, how much time do you spend in Japan?
I generally go 2 or 3 times a year.
Is that largely for business or?
Oh, yeah. You need to spend time working with the different companies. It's a very different culture business-wise. I mean, it's very important to build relationships and to spend time with those people that you're doing business with.
Have you actually mastered the Japanese language yet?
Oh, I only wish I could say that I had, but I've got enough Japanese down to get around. I certainly don't have the 1900 or so kanji you need to read the newspaper or anything, but I certainly can. I can get around town, I can carry on basic conversation, I can do some basic business. But when you get into something a little more complex, and generally, you know, you need to have somebody else work with you on that.
So have you eaten sushi?
Oh, yeah, we can get a lot of sushi when I go over there. There is actually a decent sushi place here in Des Moines now, which has been kind of a boon, too. Believe it or not, in the middle of Midwest, there is a decent sushi place.
You know, someone told me about that, and I just don't believe it. And what
was
it, Jake?
They tell me they fly in every day.
Really?
I
couldn't do it. I mean, I'm particular about my sushi, even here on the coast, but going to the Midwest, I don't know.
Well, it's not really what you would think that you would find fine sushi, but it's pretty good, I think.
All right. Well, if you've been to Japan and you've had it there, you would have probably a better basis of comparison.
It's certainly not the same as having it fresh in Japan.
Well,
but I'd
hope not.
But it's still not too bad.
So is it largely Japan that you're working with when it comes to this stuff?
Over the course of the last 3 or 4 years, we have had quite a bit of Korean animation that's come over. That seems to be really the big thing. There's been some limited dabbling in some of the Chinese stuff that's come through, but most of the product is still primarily Japanese, or it's coordinated by a Japanese studio who may outsource some of the animation itself to a different country like Korea. But your planning and stuff seems to be primarily in Japan.
Have you looked into doing more teleconferences to kind of cut down on some of that travel and connect with people by
video?
Well,
I tell you what, it's really kind of been nice. You know, with the way that the internet has come up and the advent of email and such, you know, it's a lot easier to have that communication flow when you can send an email to these people instead of having a fax or to deal with the time difference to call. So that has helped a great deal. But at the same time, it's not the same culture as here. It's not like you're cold calling people up and saying, hey, you know, I'd like to do business with you. Here's some money. I'd like to buy it. I mean, FaceTime is very, very important. And in Japan, that culture piece is something that you have to really respect.
Is this something that you're probably going to do for the long haul?
Oh, I think so. I don't think anime is going away anytime soon.
Well, I wouldn't imagine.
I don't know that I'll be doing it at age 90 or anything, but I mean, it's certainly a... I enjoy it a great deal. It's not what I expected to do when I went to school. I did not think that I, you know, look at my family and say, hey, by the way, I'm going to be selling cartoons for a living for 20 years. But at the same time, it's a big challenge, and I enjoy it, and it's a very interesting business, and it changes quite rapidly. And, I mean, as you might expect, the way that just look at how video and stuff is handled today.
Yeah.
When we started selling product, we were selling product that was in Japanese with English subtitles on VHS cassette. I couldn't sell that today to save my life. I mean, who would buy that? So, I mean, you have to adapt to that. I mean, there are a lot of changes with the way that the internet stuff is going, and the streaming video, and the IPTV, and the VOD video on demand stuff. I mean, you have to adapt to the market, and the market changes. And, you know, it keeps you on your toes.
Now, if I were to, just for argument's sake, start getting into anime or manga, what would you suggest I start with? I mean,
buy all of my titles first.
Good answer.
Because those are the best titles, and, you know, after you've finished spending all that money, then you can buy other stuff.
Okay.
No, I mean, it's difficult to say. Everyone has different tastes. Would you consider yourself, what, a sci-fi fan? Or
yeah.
Would you say?
Yeah,
well, I mean, you can go back to the classics like Akira.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good shows on that. I mean, that recent release of Appleseed is really good. If you like space comedy, one of the shows we own, Irresponsible Captain Tyler, is hilarious and is a good show. It's a real farce. We have another show recently we released called Shingu, Secret of the Stellar Wars, which has got some really good sci-fi component to it. But, there's so much. It's such a diverse thing. It's not one of those things where you can say, well, I'm thinking about getting into anime. What do I want to watch? Well, you almost have to clarify that and say, okay, well, do you like drama? Do you like girl shows? Do you like guy shows? Do you like sci-fi? Do you like cyberpunk? Do you want romance? Do you want comedy? Because just like the feature films, there's such a diverse group of product that is there. That you say, look, I'm really looking for a dramatic element. Well, why don't you check out His and Her Circumstances? It's about life as a teen. You could look at Piano, which is something that tells the story of a young girl growing up with her first crush. You know, that's a great, you know, very popular show with girls. I mean, these are just, it's just not the same thing as saying, well, you know, I just like anime, because it's just not, it's just too diverse to just pick up one item and say this is it. You might pick up one and not like it, but that doesn't mean you don't like anime, because there's all kinds of other stuff to try.
What was the first piece of anime you ever saw?
Well,
oh, wait, if I can, if you can share that.
The first piece of anime I ever saw, well, man, it's going to have to be Astro Boy, I'll be honest with you, because, you know, my life was Astro Boy for several years there for a while.
Wow.
I mean, that's all I did was, you know, deal with rusty film cans and try to get everything, you know, up and running to get that show running. you know, between that and Kimba the White Lion, which is another 60s show that we own that I, you know, went through the love of finding film cans and stuff for. But I mean, some of the early shows I remember watching, Dominion Tank Police and Bubblegum Crisis, and, you know, some of the real classic shows, Akira. I mean, these are shows that came out in the late 80s, and they were just great. I mean, and they're still classics today, I think.
Well, I've heard the names before, but I wouldn't be
able
to tell.
Well, it's like Evangelion. Everybody knows Evangelion. I mean, it is a classic anime
title.
I've
heard of it, yes.
And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you can go back and watch it again and see something new every time you watch it. And I know it's been re-released recently with a remastered video and such. And I'm sure when HD comes around, it'll probably be out again. Mm. But, you know, that's one of those shows that will sell perennially and it will always be popular.
You brought up Pokemon, and I'm curious to know if you cringe when you see the amount of commercialism that that particular series has gone through.
Well, I don't know. I mean, any show that sold primarily to that age range to be popular has to have that kind of commercial support.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people once asked me, like, if you could pick any part of the video market to sell to, which one would it be? Well, it certainly would not be the kids' video market. That is the most intensely competitive segment of the market there is. And if you don't have that toy support and the kids don't like the toys and they don't like the characters, they're just not going to buy it. You know, it was a highly commercialized product, but, I mean, there was just an enormous demand for it. I mean, we still sell Pokemon today. I mean, that show came out in, what, 94?
Yeah.
I mean, it's been something, well, I don't know if it was that far back. It's been a few years, and it's still being released today. I have a new movie, I think, in Japan that's come out recently, and a couple of new series that have been released over the course of the last year or so, Pokemon Advanced and Pokemon Masters, I think, just came out. So, I mean, it's still popular today, and it will be. You know, and believe me, everybody is looking for what's the next Pokemon because they want to be able to repeat that franchise, and that franchise has done enormously well.
Naturally. Now, do you run specials on your website very often?
We have daily specials, we have weekly specials, and we have monthly specials.
Are they really special, or are they just, you
well,
know?
Well, I think they're special. We have Sean's Daily Deals, which generally are really deep discounted special offers of stuff that, you know, that we have 10 every day, and every week on Thursdays we change our specials and have different items that are on sale, and I think we do a pretty good job of picking some good deals for people, and you know, then we'll have other specialty sales. Like, for example, we have a sale running right now, which is everything from a specific vendor. Actually, this particular week, we're running a sale on Bandai Entertainment products. So, you know, I want to keep people interested. I want to give people a good deal. And when we have that ability, I certainly try to pass it on. I mean, that's part of keeping people interested.
And you're doing a podcast now.
Yes, we do a podcast every other week. It's called Anime Today. And it's kind of an interesting thing. We decided we wanted to try something different, and podcasting is just fascinating, and some of the people in our office had I'd never heard of it, you know, to be honest with you, and some of the technical people in the office said, well, you know, we want to do a podcast. You know, this is what a podcast is, and this is what we want to try, and it's been very, very successful. It's kind of interesting. We have anime reviews in it, and we have a series of talking about what it's like to go to Japan, and I don't know if you've listened to the podcast, but it's a lot of fun. I think that people certainly have been enjoying it. I know I have.
So that was something that bubbled from the ground on up. You weren't getting a lot of demand from your customers.
Well, nobody came to us and said, Sean, we really want you to have a podcast. No. But at the same time, it's an interesting avenue of getting information to people, and not only that, it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's like, you know, I'm sure you understand this, you yourself, I mean, obviously, but you know, it's like having a little radio show talking about anime every other week, mm-hmm. and our people really get into it, and that's one of the things I also enjoy about it. The guys that are in charge of it, they make sure that everyone in our office is included. I mean, we have people from all the different departments in the office that they're included, whether they're reading a review or talking about something in general. It's really just kind of a lot of fun. It brings a lot of people together for the company, and it's kind of, I enjoy that part too.
So have you seen your sales impacted by your podcast at all? You'll talk about a review and then...
Well, I mean, we certainly see people checking the product out, which is what the whole point is. I mean, I can't really say that I can tie, you know, lots and lots and lots of sales back to it, but it, like any other piece of advertising, it's always difficult to track that kind of stuff.
Yeah, totally.
But that doesn't mean that it's not worth doing, and I think it gets the word out about anime, and whether they buy it from us or they buy it from someone else, I don't know. To me, I just want them to buy anime and be interested and excited about it.
Have you thought about kind of breaking into the Netflix market and being a vertical?
Being a rental product place?
Yeah, you know, there's you've got it for adult titles, you've got it for general titles. Why not anime?
Well, I don't know that I want to be in that market. I mean, there are fairly heavy hitter players in that market today.
Yeah. Well, so. I mean, is there an anime community that's not being served by a Netflix?
I don't know. I mean, you know, our product is available through Netflix, so I don't know that it's necessary to say, hey, you know, we're gonna do the same thing when there's a service out there that already provides that. So, I mean, that's probably not something that I would look to get into right now. I'd rather stay focused on what our core business is.
Do you have any loss leaders in this industry?
Loss leaders?
Yeah. Or is the whole thing? Yeah.
Well, I mean, sometimes I put specials on as loss leaders, I suppose.
Yeah.
But
I'm sure your loyal customer base appreciates that.
Well, yes, but you know, the whole point is just to provide good value and, at the same time, you know, obviously keep the lights on. I mean, I can do what all the other .com people did back in the nice big .com bubble era, like sell product for free and you know, hope to build market share that way. But that's not going to really keep my lights on. You know, I want to be, like you said, I am here for a little bit for the long haul, make sure my bills get paid and that we can continue to provide service. But we're a very very service oriented organization, and that's one of the things that I am very very proud of. You know, our people, you know, are very, you know, very talented at what they do in terms of making sure that the material that we get to the customer, when the packages are packed, they're packed well. When the people, you know, call us, we get them the answers they need, or they send an email, we make sure that the answers are given as quickly as we can.
I noticed the front page of your site, it looks like, almost like a blog. I don't know if that was done on purpose, but...
Oh, you mean in terms of the news and stuff?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we try to give some different anime news. We're not an anime news site, but at the same time, I think it's interesting to kind of give some of the highlights of what we find out, or new products that are being released, or you know, and so on. So, we leave the anime news sites to have the main anime news. I mean, if we see something that's real exciting, I think that we think the customer base would be interested in, a lot of times we'll post it.
Has that actually increased page views by doing it that way?
Well, I think that definitely that it brings customers to the site. I mean, they know that if they're looking for something that beyond just going into the store, if there's some interesting anime news, they can take a look at it there. One of the things I try to also make sure, I know that our people are real picky about what we'll post for news, because, you know, as you know, you can post news, but if it's not verified, that doesn't mean that it's necessarily correct.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm kind of a stickler with that. It needs to be something that's substantiated before I'm going to post it on my site.
That makes sense. Now, where do you find most of your audience comes from?
Well, you know, looking demographically, I mean, our audience is everywhere. It's really kind of interesting. I mean, we ran a map, I think, last year, where we kind of plotted a data point for every single customer that's ever bought from us. And it was just a big black map. Hmm. I mean, we have customers at the tip of Maine, at the tip of the Aleutian Islands in Alaska. I have customers in Puerto Rico and customers all over the world, for that matter. So, I mean, it really mirrors the population. I mean, where the heaviest population is where we have the heaviest push for customers, in the New York and California and so on. It's interesting to see that anime as a genre has expanded to a level where you could say something like that. It used to be anime was very, you know, tied into, you know, certain fan organizations. I mean, maybe you'd have a group of people on the East Coast, a group of people in California and all that, but now it's pretty much everywhere.
Now, is that something that is it just a general trend because of things like the internet, you think?
Well, I think that it's come just with time. I mean, the market has matured. It's not that there's not three anime releases out there like there used to be. There's a lot of product out there that's available. You've seen more theatrical releases of some anime. Buena Vista, part of Disney, has released some of the most popular anime movies of all time on DVD.
Oh, really?
Like Howl's Moving Castle and Totoro and some of the Miyazaki stuff, which is just absolutely incredible. So I mean, it's not limited to the core fan base anymore. It's become much more of a mass market medium.
And when you watch anime these days, is it? Do you enjoy it still like you used to, or is it kind of like, I gotta watch another anime?
Well, most of the time I do enjoy it, unless it's something I really don't like. But I mean, like anything, there are shows that you like and the shows that you don't like. Mm. So, and it's a diverse enough product line that you're going to have that. I mean, we recently re-released one of our shows, Irresponsible Captain Tyler, and when we were putting the packaging and stuff together, I went back and rewatched it, just remembered how awesome it was and how much I enjoyed it. So, I mean, the product is definitely is something that you can go back and check again, and just like any other movie, you might want to rewatch.
Do you actually hold all inventory there?
Yeah, we actually just moved into a big, giant, huge warehouse building just to the northwest of Des Moines. Hmm. So we do carry, we have a 76,000 square foot building. So
Jesus.
I mean, it's huge. And we store an enormous amount of inventory at any one time of DVD products and books and posters and plush animals and bags and all kinds of various anime merchandise. And so we keep a fairly substantial amount of inventory in stock at all times.
How many people are working in the company?
We're right around 50 right now.
Wow, that's pretty substantial.
Yeah, well, I can remember when it was two in a closet, so.
Oh, boy. It's a little bigger than that now.
Well, you know, we can't all work out of our locker for all our lives, you know.
Yeah, well, we try. Doesn't always happen that way, but we try.
No, I've been really happy with it. I tell you, it's nice to see. It's like anything else. You can see it grow and be excited about how that is, and that's fun, too. I mean, that's part of the business that I enjoy is the growth and seeing people grow up with it and learn and grow and you know, adapt to the company as it grows to a bigger entity as well.
So are any plans for the future? I mean, I know you're kind of pushing the envelope now doing a podcast and kind of having the news on the site.
Well, I mean, we're always looking for what we need to do to adapt. I mean, the anime industry has changed, matured. We have to keep looking towards what the future is. I mean, obviously, as you know, there's a kind of a semi-format war going on right now. We're just kind of holding back and watching to see what's going to happen with that.
Hey, what do you think of the PSP? Speaking of, I mean, you reminded me of Sony Format Wars. What do you think of the PSP? Isn't that a perfect delivery vehicle for anime?
I have to be honest with you. I mean, I'm not going to downplay that, but I have just not seen it be the market that I thought that it was going to be.
Really?
And I honestly think that it just people want to be able to buy a product and watch it anywhere and not be limited to just playing it in their PSP.
Yeah.
You know, why would I want to buy a movie so I can watch it on my PSP but not be able to play it on my DVD player that I have at my house?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest downfall to
UMDs.
Well,
I think that's one thing. And one is that there's a fairly high cost of entry. I mean, there's only certain people that can actually do the authoring for that, and it can only be replicated at, like, one facility in the whole country.
Whoa.
So, I mean, that's one of the other reasons we really haven't seen it. I just haven't seen it take off like I thought that it might. I mean, I know there's a lot of PSPs out there and such, but I'm not seeing the sales that I was expecting in that.
Hmm. You were expecting it to kind of explode.
Well, I figured, you know, the core market for gamers and stuff for anime is high. I figured there definitely would be sales there, but I'm just not seeing. I honestly think that's a lot of it. I mean, they want to be able to buy it once. Hmm. And, you know, with the proliferation of cheap portable DVD players, I mean, I just don't know that it's necessary.
Yeah, what's the point? Is there something
I have seen is people, you know, learning how to figure out how to pull the material off and dump it on a memory stick and play it on their PSP anyway.
Yeah, a few of us do that. A few of us actually do that.
And that's obviously also something that, you know, we as an industry have to be careful with. I mean, we're kind of an industry born from semi-piracy. Mm. The, you know, back in the 80s when people were wanting to watch anime, they imported it on 14th generation VHS cassettes and watched it at fan conventions. And, you know, fan subbing is still, you know, it's one of those things where the material can sometimes can be over here, you know, on a fan sub copy before I can even get a copy of it from the licensor to review to buy it. And, you know, the delivery vehicle of the internet and the quickness that that material can spread these days really is a detriment in some ways. Because it's difficult as a licensor to say, well, geez, I'm going to pony up the hefty cash that's necessary to put this together when, you know, you got all these people who already have it.
Yeah. Now, being someone who actually holds licenses for content, what do you think about file sharing systems, you know, whether it's BitTorrent or eDonkey or Napster, all these ways of easily getting content from other people?
Well, you know, the thing is that, you know, you have those people who say that they will definitely go out and they'll buy it. They'll use it to sample and then they'll buy it. But, you know, a lot of people, they just don't. There's just not a lot we can do about it, unfortunately, and that's a serious challenge, I think, not necessarily just for our industry, but, you know, for all industries as a whole in terms of the video and the music people. I mean, it's one of those things that's just simply not going to go away, and I don't necessarily agree with the way that some people are trying to go out and eliminate it, because, I mean, I just don't think it's going to work, but you have to adapt, and that's kind of what I was saying earlier. You have to look to adapt, and, you know, the ways that you figure that out is you figure out how to do it in a manner that people are willing to pay for it.
Now, have you been approached by any VOD or video on demand services?
We actually have quite a bit of stuff on VOD right now. You know, we do provide, you know, like all the trailers and stuff that we have are provided in a form. You can actually download them from the iTunes Music Store. We don't actually charge for that. That's free. But
wow,
you know, we are looking at alternative content delivery because honestly, that's the future, and we know that, and it's necessary for us to look to explore it. Like I said, you know, you have to adapt, and those are things that you have to do. Now, I don't think prepackaged programming is going to go away anytime soon. I mean, the fact is, it's still easier to go to the store, pick up a DVD, and throw it in your player than it is to download all kinds of junk and, you know, figure out how to get it so you can watch it on your television.
Yeah.
It's not as simple. Someday it will be, but it's not right now.
Do you find yourself holding back on embracing some of those things until we kind of see the dust settle?
Well, I'm certainly, obviously we're hedging, waiting for this format thing for the high-def stuff to go through. I mean, it's very difficult for us to want to go out and spend money to, especially as a small studio, to try to author anything in any of those formats until somebody comes out and says, well, you know, this is the one that's format that's going to be the winner.
Now, what are you leaning towards, Blu-ray or HD?
Well, I don't know, we're kind of Blu-ray people over at our place, but, you know, and then that's mostly because, you know, we're computer people and we like the fact that we can embed all that Java stuff in it. But it's just hard to say. I mean, I just don't know what's going to happen there. And, you know, at the same time, unless the product is made, and that's the part that's even harder, though, you know, to be honest with you, is a lot of the stuff that we're releasing is made on video to start with. So, getting it up converted to a high definition, really, you aren't gaining much anything. Unless it's made on film or something, it's difficult to get any more resolution than what it was produced originally in.
So
that doesn't mean you can't make it as high a quality as you possibly can, and certainly we do that, but you also have the extra capacity which allows you to do other things too.
Would you see yourself, if, let's say, there is no clear winner and we have both HD products or HD DVD products and Blu-ray products on the market, and they seem to be maybe, and it would never happen this way, but I'm sure, like a 50-50 split right down the middle. What would you do?
Oh, geez. Well, that would be a nightmare for most content providers. think about it. You go back into the Betamax versus the VHS days. Every publisher had to put their product out in two different forms. Then what you're doing is you're creating inventory on both sides. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't sell, then what do you do? I mean, I would really love to see something that, you know, come out and say, hey, this is what it's going to be. I really am not excited about having both of those formats out at the same time.
Well, not to mention the customer confusion.
Oh, my God, it's going to be enormous. So I bought this disc, and I didn't realize that it was a Blu-ray disc, and I need to return it, even though I opened it, and blah, blah, blah. And now, it's going to be bad news, and I really wish they would settle this thing here pretty soon instead of having both of those formats out there running at the same time.
Now, how do you see this playing out? Do you think Blu-ray is going to edge out? Is it going to be the first person that's got a player on the market?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, part of it's going to be cost. I think, you know, I noticed that after CES that a lot of the HD DVD material was cheaper.
Yeah.
Which that's going to be one thing.
And they just, I think today I read somewhere that Blu-ray discs are like, I think just a few dollars more expensive than regular discs. So it's, I mean, I don't know how much the player is going to be. The player may still be $1,000.
Right. They're both going to be expensive on the front end. I mean, it just like DVDs, DVD players were $1,500 when they first came out. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you remember.
Yep.
And now you can buy one for $11. You know, I mean, it's just kind of astonishing. The fact is, I think if some of it's going to come down to cost. The big question factor in my mind is the PlayStation 3.
Really?
You know, if that comes out and it has a Blu-ray disc player in it, you know, again, the gamers may drive that market. The other place that's going to drive the market is, and I think you're going to laugh, it's going to be the porn people.
No, I agree. No, I'm not laughing.
Porn people always set the standard.
And
it's astonishing.
It's true.
Know,
it's so true.
It's you know, people don't realize that, but you know, if the porn people all say we're going Blu-ray, I guarantee you that's where it's going to go.
Yep. And it's not a political statement. It's just the truth. They're usually the first to adopt and adapt to new technologies. In fact,
For DVD, that was absolutely the case.
Well, yeah, because you can think of no other kind of DVD you buy that actually uses the angle feature. I mean, not that I know.
Well, we've got anime titles that use the angle feature now. Come on.
Really? I've never used the angle. I don't buy that kind of stuff, but I've never really used the angle feature before in my life.
We use the angle feature to present different versions of the credits, like the credits in English versus the credits in Japanese.
Oh, interesting. Very
interesting. I mean, we do alternate angles on our disc, but you know, it's definitely true though. I mean, the adult market is so enormous in terms of that they do hold a lot of sway in terms of, you know, adoption of material and technical standards and such. So, I mean, that's kind of another one of those factors. To me, those are the two big things that are going to decide the market. It's going to be what the adult industry decides to do. And whether the PlayStation 3 is adopted so widely that everybody will have one. I mean, I think Microsoft made an enormous mistake not including an HD DVD player in their Xbox 360.
Well, it's going to be an add-on.
Well, yeah, but see, it's an add-on. If it's there already, that's one thing. If I got to go buy it, that's not the same. If I buy a PlayStation 3, it's already got it in it.
Yeah,
I don't have to go buy anything else.
But how much is that PlayStation 3 going to be? And is it actually going to be worth buying? It's a big question.
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see how that works out.
and admittedly, I've had a PlayStation before, and the games I played on it, you know, were video games that I played. But it just seems I'm a little concerned about the PS3. I was hoping that it was going to be valid competition, but between it and the Xbox 360. But I don't know. Sony can't even get their online stuff right now, and they're only going to be on, like, Generation 1 by the time the PS3 rolls out, whereas Xbox 360 has really had a few years to kind of smooth out the
rollouts. Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, it's always interesting when these guys, they go back and forth with the various game machines that come out, and you know, they leapfrog each other, and it's kind of interesting to watch. And it'll be interesting to see. I mean, like I said, the only thing I can say is that I think that, you know, how much that is adopted is definitely going to make a case or not make a case for that Blu-ray disc, because I know that's their format they're going to be presenting all their material on.
I agree. It's almost, but I've made the...
I don't think it's a home run for it, but I mean, it certainly is...
Well, it's a step in the right direction.
...into consideration.
You know, and honestly, even if it is more expensive, I just want to follow one thing, just like yourself, you know, just one thing. But I think we're in a different era, and I think it's correct to use the analogy of beta versus VHS in the sense of the formats.
I still have a Betamax player. Which is sad.
Oh, you are you're the person that bought
it.
Okay,
I don't use it. I don't think. I think it's sitting gathering dust in a closet somewhere. But I mean, I own such a huge stable of laser discs from back in the laser disc days.
Oh boy.
That it's hard for me to just throw all those out. It's like, oh, you could rebuy them all on DVD. I'm not going to rebuy all this stuff over and over and over. I already have it on laserdisc.
Yeah.
You know, although buying a laserdisc player today would be like, you know, buying components for the ENIAC, you know? I mean, it's just, the fact is that, you know, I don't need yet another format.
Yeah, well, that's
I would
true.
Like to have them just pick another one. I mean, it would just be nice, but unfortunately, I don't think that's the way it's going to go. I think that you are going to have rival formats in the market, and it's going to be a while. And, I mean, it was kind of the same with the recordable DVDs. I mean, look at that. There's still, what, 4, 5, 6 different formats?
Yeah.
You know, they did the manufacturer people finally just said, screw it, we'll just, you know, support every single format so that nobody will ever have a problem.
Yep, and that's pretty much the way those drives, that's the only kind of drive you really want to buy these days. Something that reads and writes at all. Otherwise, it's kind of a waste of money.
Well, of course, because, you know, who knows what the guy that's sending you the stuff is going to be sending it on.
Yep. Now, what have you been hearing from other content providers on this particular debate or argument?
No one on the anime side, as far as I'm aware, really has committed to anything.
Hmm. Well, but they feel they're in the same boat as you. They're just waiting for
everybody's just watching.
Yeah.
I mean, again, no matter what, the smaller studios, there's going to be a barrier to entry on that on the front end. I mean, it's just like when DVDs originally came out, to author a DVD was tens of thousands of dollars. I mean, it was like $20,000 or $30,000 to author a DVD when DVDs came out. You know, it wasn't something that you could do for cheap, that's for certain. Now it's something that you can buy a piece of software and run on your, you know, on a computer in your office. It's not a big deal. Well, you're going to have that barrier to entry again, because it's not like all of a sudden that the equipment to make Blu-ray discs or to make HD DVD, although it'll be easier, there's still going to be some level of barrier to entry, I think. Secondly, I think that your replication plants that are replicating the stuff are still in a testing phase, so there's not a lot of capacity yet either. So, you know, the regular DVD stuff for most people is more than enough, and they're more than happy with it. So, yeah, I think that you're going to see that stuff continue to go well. And I almost am somewhat concerned in a way that these new high-def formats are really going to be a niche market for a while. Hmm.
Do you think anime is just going to wait for it to crawl out of the niche before it starts sleeping in?
Oh, I'm sure somebody will announce something at some point, and there'll be releases, but I think they'll be limited to some of the more blockbuster-type stuff. The things that really would take advantage of the medium. I mean, you're not going to see the TV shows that were originally recorded on video to start with, you know, suddenly upconverted to DVD, you know, high def DVD.
All right,
I don't see that happening. You know, what I would see maybe is them being able to put a lot more episodes on one disc and provide better value to the customer.
What's the weirdest thing that's ever happened to you in working within this industry?
In the anime industry?
Yeah.
The weirdest thing.
And I'm sure it happened in Japan.
Yeah,
or maybe
trying to think of what would be a good thing there.
It could have happened in Iowa. I don't know. Just the weirdest, like, you know, culture shock, you know, something.
Well,
someone
really,
said something.
I mean, honestly, if you want to talk about weird things, I remember going to the VSDA software convention in the late 80s, hawking my shows, and people looking at me like I was insane. You know, here's a kid who's, what, 16, 17 years old at a video convention trying to convince video stores to pick up his VHS cassettes of a 30-year-old TV show. I mean, there was some good bizarre looks there, but I don't know. I honestly can't. I'm not. Nothing's really coming to mind that's bizarre.
So you guys are just normal people then, with normal jobs. It's just you just like anime.
Well, yeah. I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing.
It's not an accusation, merely an observation.
Live streaming of The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media and Limelight Networks. Download Windows Media Player 10 to listen to The Chris Perillo Show live every Thursday from 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific, GMT-8.